Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Métis Voices Radio Show, our own internet radio program at CBS Radio every Friday evening. Tonight, we start off the program by playing the Red River Jig by the Métis Toe Tappers. Our show begins at 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Station 2. To listen, just click to listen arrow at the top. If that doesn't work, scroll down and choose whichever Listen Live button works for you. Each show features a variety of subjects and special guests coming to you live from the Machif Métis Museum in beautiful Raven Beach, just outside of Clearwater, British Columbia, Canada. Call-in lines will be open throughout the program. Here are the numbers to call. In the U.S. and Canada, toll-free 888-228-4494 and worldwide toll-free 877.
Good day, everyone, and welcome. Tonight, we are doing something a little bit different with our guests. Ladies and gentlemen, we ask you to listen carefully for the next 10 minutes while Wally Garou does his last testament of Louis Riel. On this day, the 28th day of July, in the year Our Lord's 1885, at the town of Regina, Louis Riel, you stand charged on the oath that with the first and other false traitors armed and array in a like warlike manner, you did levy and make war against Our Lady the Queen, and did maliciously and treacherously attempt by force of arms to destroy the Constitution and the government of the realm. And two, dispose Our Lady, our said Lady, the Queen, from the style and honor and kindly name of the Imperial Crown of the Realm, to the evil examples of others in like cases offending. Louis Riel, are you guilty or not guilty?
I have the honor to address the court. I am not guilty. Your honors, gentlemen of the jury, it would be easy for me today to play insanity because the circumstances are such as to excite any man, and the natural excitement my trial caused me would justify me to appear with my mind out of its ordinary condition. If I cannot speak English very well, still I will try, because most of you here speak English. I hope with the help of God, I will maintain calmness and decorum as suits this honorable court, this honorable jury. You have seen by the papers in the hands of the crown that I am naturally inclined to think of God at the beginning of my action. I wish if I do, you will not take it as a part of a play of insanity. Oh my God, help me through thy grace and the divine influence of Jesus Christ. Oh my God, bless me. Bless this honorable court. Bless the honorable jury. Bless my good lawyers who have come 700 leagues to try to save my life. Bless also the lawyers for the crown. They have done what they thought their duty, because they have shown fairness to me, which at first I did not expect. Oh my God, bless all who are around me. Through the grace and influence of Jesus Christ our Savior, change the curiosity of those who are watching me. Change that curiosity into sympathy for me. Amen. On the day of my birth, I was helpless, and my mother took care of me, and I lived. Today, although I'm a man, I'm as helpless before this court, in the dominion of Canada, and in this world, as I was helpless on the knees of my mother on the day of my birth. The Northwest is also my mother. It is my mother country. And I am sure that my mother country will not kill me, any more than my mother did 40 years ago when I came into this world. Because even if I have my faults, she's my mother. And she will see that I'm true and be full of love for me. When I first came to the Northwest in July, the 1st of July, 1884, I found the Indians suffering. I found the half-breeds eating the rotten pork of Dodsonby Company. They were getting sick and weak every day. I also saw the whites. Although I'm a half-breed, the greater part of my heart and blood is white. So I want to help also the whites to the best of my ability. I work for them here as I work for them in Manitoba. 15 years ago, I can say that by the grace of God, I am the founder of Manitoba. I worked to get free institution for Manitoba. I was exiled for my pain. But today, in Manitoba, they have those institutions. And I am here, hounded, outlawed, on trial for my life, forgotten in Manitoba as if I were dead. But I am not dead. Not yet. When the glorious General Middleton fired shell and bullet thick as mosquito on a hot summer day, I knew that only the grace of God saved me. I said, "Oh my God, I offer you all I am. All my existence I offer you to save my people. Please to make my weakness an instrument to help my people, my country." In hope and humility I prayed that prayer. And my prayer was heard. And I was given a mission. I say humbly that God, who is in this box with me, made me his prophet, prophet of the new world. God directed me to lead my people. I have led them. For months I tried to bring the people of Saskatchewan to understand the hand of God directing them. How best to get about getting their grievance attended to without resort to arms. And they were with me. We tried appeals, petitions. Petitions were sent to the federal government in Ottawa. Petitions had been sent for years. But so irresponsible was the government, they hardly even bothered to reply. Instead of dealing with the just claim of the people, all they have done is send police and more police. No answer but police. This is insanity, complicated by paralysis. I was leading my people against this insanity when I was attacked by armed police. I answer with arms. That is what is called my crime of high treason, for which they hold me today, and for which they would tear me in pieces. If you accept the plea of the defense that I am not responsible for my acts, then acquit me. If you pronounce in favor of the Crown, which contends that I am responsible, acquit me all the same. You are perfectly justified in deciding that I acted with a sound mind in quarreling with an insane and irresponsible government. If there is high treason, it is not mine, but theirs. Their high treason against the people of the Northwest. I'm glad the Crown has proved that I am leader of the half-breed. That is important to remember. It means I stand in this dock, not only as myself, but as the chosen representative and leader of all people, the half-breed people. Can a whole people be guilty of treason? I beg you to think of that. I am their leader, and perhaps one day I will be acknowledged as more than a leader of the half-breed, as a leader of all that is good in this great country. All my life I have worked for practical results. If I have succeeded, after my death, my children will shake hands with the Protestants. I do not want the evil that exists in Europe to be repeated here. There will at last be a new world, but not in some days or years. It may take hundreds of years. Yet now we make a beginning. We invite to our new world Italians, Poles, Bavarians, Belgians, the Swedes, the Irish, the Jews. All are welcome, provided only that they will work with us and acknowledge Jesus Christ as the only hope and Savior of the world. Now in the soil of this great land, to have their start to make a nation. Who starts the nation? God. God is the maker of the universe. Our planet is in his hands. All the nations are members of his family. To each, as a good father, he gives their inheritance. But God cannot create a tribe, a nation, without giving it a place. We are not birds. we have to walk on the ground. And this is our ground, our country. We will enrich it. We will cultivate it. This is the genius of civilization. Honorable Court, that is what I have to say. Of this I am guilty. Of the charge against me, I am not guilty. I am confident that for this, I will not be destroyed. Thank you, that's the end of that.
Wow. Unbelievable. I have got chills running down my spine right now. This was the testimony of Louis Riel, was presented by my good friend and Métis brother, Wally Grew, as known as Wandering Wally. Welcome, Wally.
Hi, good talk to you, Dale.
Yeah. I want to take you on tour. You are going to go on tour. You're going to be the new Louis Riel, and we're going to go all over the world with you. I love hearing you. So, listen, Wally, it was so nice to have you here on our show, and that was a fabulous testimony. Very moving. I'm wondering, how did you get on shows for quite a while?
Well, I'll tell you how this one started. I'd been acting after I quit drinking, which is 21 years ago.
Congratulations.
I started taking up acting, and there was local theater, like musical theater, in down here in Medicine Hat. And I got involved with the groups there, and one day I walked into one of the pubs in town, and they were going to play darts or something, or pool maybe, I can't remember, but when I walked in, this one lady who's a director, she walked up to me and she said, "You're Louis Riel." And she said, "You're Louis." She said, "You're Louis." And I said, "What?" She said, "You're Louis." And I said, "What are you talking about?" So she told me she was doing a play for the Métis Assembly here in Medicine Hat, and that was in 1996. And she said, "You're going to be Louis Riel." She said, "I'm going to cast you as Louis Riel." So she had a cast, and she was 30 men. There was all the witnesses. There were five prosecution, five defense lawyers, two judges. There was a magistrate and a judge that presided over the trial, and some people in the audience. And she had one guy dressed up in buckskins. He was one of the guys staying in the trial. We even had a picture of the Queen Victoria in the background. And as luck had it, we had many lawyers, actual lawyers in our cast. I think we had six of them who were actual lawyers, and they called in some favors. So we ended up with a bunch of barrister gowns. So the judges and all the guys who were playing lawyers all had magistrate gowns to wear. So it was pretty. When you looked at it and the set, it looked real realistic. And you said about goosebumps. I get every time I do that play, every time I recite that, I get goosebumps.
You know, Wally, we've been trying to get you on for the show, but I know you're quite busy, and you're like everybody else. You're a talented Métis artist that goes out and works and works for a living, and you know, nobody gives you a free hand, and I realize that. So I really am I'm really applaud that to have you on the show, and I needed to do this for you because I think this is the year that we need to start working together as a nation and listening to what Louis was there for and why he died for us Métis people. And it's very important to me because, you know, I see that all we're doing right now is we're separating from the actual fact of who we are and why our ancestors have gone through all this agony, and then all of a sudden now we got a new nation coming through, and we're not working together. We're working like the way they wanted us to work, against each other. So it's been very nice to have you on. Go ahead.
Dale, I just read the paper that Manitoba got their hunting and fishing rights, the Métis in Manitoba.
Yeah, well, they've been if you look, it's only Manitoba in certain areas. You see, they were talking about it last night on the news. You see.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and we're going through the same hardships up here, but it's not a big deal. Well, it is a big deal if you do it, and you're hunting for your needs to feed your family, and today you're going to need to feed your family the way our government is tearing us apart little by little, you know. So, anyways, where were you born?
I was born in Winnipeg. Actually, St. Boniface Hospital in Winnipeg.
Yeah. Did you grow up there?
I lived there till the first 20 years of my life, and then I traveled around for a year or so, and then I ended up back here in Medicine Hat. After coming through 1 year, I decided it looked like a good place to settle down.
Yeah. You were like me. Probably we had the problem with the bottle, right? You know, we were alcoholics. That's what I am. I was an alcoholic, right? And you know, and
well,
the funny part about it is my alcoholism, I could afford it. Go ahead.
So I always afforded it too. I don't know how I ever did, because when I quit drinking, I couldn't imagine where I found all the money to drink, because I sure wasn't around when I quit. But, I always found money to drink, and, you know, you say our alcoholism, but, you know, I'm still an alcoholic, I don't drink today. But if I ever take a drink, I know I'm right back where I started before I quit, so it's important that I remember all the time that I'm still an alcoholic. It's just that I'm, you know, I choose not to drink today.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's good. And I see you're on the red road, as we call it. Us Métis, we call it the brown road, because we're half, you know, not red, but not white, but we're brown. So we're on the brown road. How's that for the Métis terms today?
That's good. I was waiting for your call an hour ago, and I forgot that BC is on a different time than we are.
Yeah, it's right now it's 8:17 for us. So
yeah.
Now you're living in Medicine Hat right now. Do you do a lot of are you being called to do more testimonies at all?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, I did. We've had one Louisville week, which is like Métis week. I did it a couple times. I did it once at the Esplanade, which is our new theater building here in Medicine Hat. And I also did it downstairs in the Legion when we had our elders' banquet and the performance of it there, too. And you've seen it. You've seen it. When I'm done doing it in real life, I have an ankle bracelet and a ball and chain that I wear,
yep.
And I get escorted in and it, and I'm wearing period costume, and I try to look very solemn and you know, I try to become Louis Riel for that short performance, and it usually moves people, you know, who hear it in life, because you've seen it, you know, yourself. I'm not doing it reading out of a book. I'm reading it out of my head, because I can hear his voice in my head. You know, I just seem to, it comes to me so natural when I do it now.
You know, I remember, you know, I have to say this to you, and I think I've talked to you before about this, but, you know, my son really was touched, I think, for a youngster. I call it, he's my youngster, but he's just a young youth, and he hasn't even experienced half the life experiences, the stuff. It hit him emotionally. And to not even know about his history, he said to me, to Dad, he says, this is really unbelievable. I don't know how to explain my feelings, he said. And I said, Chris, I know how you feel. And that's how I feel, the same way. So you really have touched a lot of people, and if you now do this and you reach the right people, you know, I got a lot of faith in our nation that, you know, we all can get along and we can all do our our part, I think this could be a very emotional experience if we could get you on a tour, and not just locally. I'm talking about nationwide. You know that they should be taking you out on a tour, and that should be your job. You should be paid to do this. You know, living out of a suitcase. I don't know if your wife will go for that, though.
Of course, she's still working full-time for the school board here in Medicine Hat. I do travel a bit playing and stuff like that, as you know. But, I'm doing this wherever I can and wherever. But, it's not a good life too much when you're married. You travel.
No.
That maybe, once she retires, maybe we can do more. Because we won't
there
be back down then.
And I guess you've got quite a ways to go, eh?
A couple more years, actually. She's only got a few more years, I think, before she can retire.
Oh, wow, there you go. So,
she's been with school ever since she got out of school, so she's got a lot of years in. And you know.
Wow, she's lots of time. Oh, that's really good for you. Yeah. So what else do you do? I know I've got your card and you know you're a tremendous singer as well. Where did you learn to do that? Did you have a lot of parents, or did your parents had music talent in their family? Or tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, my dad had a friend that played guitar and sang. His name was Norman Gray. And he was a fantastic singer, and yodel and play guitar. He actually could play violin and mouse organ and a few other instruments probably too. Accordion, I think he played accordion. But he was very musical, and he came from a musical family. My dad and mom didn't play anything. But my mom was Irish, and she sang all the time. She was from County Cork, Ireland. And as a kid, I can remember her singing around the house and in parties and stuff like that. And I always liked I watched her, and I watched Norman Gray, and I always wondered how they could do that. They could make lift the house, you know, just with their voice. They could make people smile and laugh, and in the same respect, they could sing a sad song and everybody would be crying. And I just loved that power that they had over the audience, and I always wanted to do that. So as I got older, when I learned how to play guitar, I started entertaining, and I found that I had the same ability to touch people with music, and I find I could play a lot of old folks' homes here in Medicine Hat and the hospital. In fact, that was what I was playing today, and then I went to a funeral this afternoon for a friend of mine who was another guy that played and sang and played a lot of gospel and country and music, Western music, and he died young. He was 64, had a heart attack, but he did the same thing as I do. He wrote, he played for these folks and touched their lives, you know, and they'd be sadly missed, but I enjoy doing that. It really helps me inside to do that, to touch those people's lives. You see some old people sitting there, some of them, they couldn't even tell you what they had for breakfast. But you play them some old song, and they know the words, and they're singing along, or they're tapping their feet, or you just see their eyes, they're looking, drifting off to a faraway place where they were when they heard that song. Because I like to play, you know, some of the ones they know, the old ones. Some of the best songs are still the old ones.
Yeah, you betcha. Yeah. So, yeah, that's really good to hear. So I noticed, I got one of your CDs, and I do play your music when I have a music night, when I get the shy guests not coming on and talking, but you did this for a profession, and you wrote, did you write some of your songs, or have you just, you and your partner, are you still together?
Yeah, we still, in fact, he was playing at the funeral today, him and another guy that I played with, a guy named Billy Jones, Jan Schmall and Billy Jones were playing at the funeral today. They played along with this other guy too, and so, you know, it's a very tight knit community here in Medicine Hat. For the musicians, we have a couple of organizations. The Musicians of the Hat is one of them, the Moth Foundation. In fact, not too many years ago, he got an award. It's called the Metronome Award. This guy that just died today, or got buried today, and I got one. I think a year or two before he got his, I got mine. And it's a very nice honor to be recognized by your fellow musicians in town here for the work you do or the playing you do. And so it's nice. It's one of my big accomplishments, I think, in life so far.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, that's very important to you know, to have accomplishments. You know, I mean, you know, I don't know, some people, you know, think that, you know, you're always bragging about stuff like this, but you know something, if you're trying to heal, you know, it really helps. I mean, like me, for example, when I was going through a lot of agony through my alcoholism, and you know, I look back at the past and look at all my accomplishments that I'd done, even though that half the time I don't even know if I was sober or drunk, you know, but the idea is that, you know, that I still accomplished a lot of things in my life, and I'm very proud for them. Maybe a lot of people don't think, you know, that your accomplishments are there, but they are there. They're very important to you and your growing up, and also for your healing as well. Like, I won a couple awards, and it just brought back some memories. I mean, it was 1984 when I first won my first gold medal at the Canadian Lawn Bowling Championships. And I, of course, you have to qualify through your province. Well, of course, I won a gold medal in British Columbia as well. But, you know, I returned back in 1986, and then I returned back again, and I won a silver medal then, and then I returned back in 1995, and I won a bronze medal. So I've got three medals from the Canadian at the Canadian level, and you know, I had quit because of my alcoholism. I quit, and I went into you know, reclusionation and staying away from all my friends, and I just happened to meet one of my old buddies one time, and I went back, and he invited me to go lawn bowling with him again, and I says to him, I says, his good friend, his name's George, and I said to him, I says, I don't even know if I can do this anymore, I says, because I haven't done it in almost 5 years, and of course, the first thing I did, you know, we didn't win a gold medal, but I won the silver medal, so, I mean, for British Columbia, so it's like, you know, awesome. But you feel good about yourself, you know?
It's nice that you learn how to do things when you're sober. I mean, I did a lot of things when I drank. I played pool and darts, and I was a pretty good darts player one time, and until my arthritis got in my hand too bad, I couldn't release the darts properly, but I still play pool, and I do quite well around town here, and I've managed to go to provincials for the Legion. Playing pool, so I, you know, done okay in that, but I learned how to do a lot of things sober, and I found out that I could do them better sober when I put my mind to it, because I was clear thinking, and I didn't have the highs and lows we have when drinking. So you start an event, you go to a tournament or whatever, for whatever, and you might start out not too bad, and you have a few drinks, you loosen up, and you get a little bit better, but then if you keep drinking, then you start going downhill, and it doesn't take long before you really skid downhill, but I find that when I sober, I do things like play pool or whatever. I don't have the highs and lows. I start out and I get better as it goes on, and I keep on getting better because there's no low. I don't have to, you know, I don't start falling down after I had, you know, important games at the end. And what the big ones are, you know, the finals, and there you're really coming alive. And you're getting into your stroke then. And if you're drunk or you're drinking, that's when you start to fall down, you know. You might think you're doing good, but you know, alcohol is a good number.
Yeah, you betcha it is. Listen, I'm going to take a little break here. In the meantime, if there's anyone that would like to phone us in and ask Wally any questions or would like to make a comment, the numbers are, in Canada and the U.S., toll-free, 888-28-4494. And worldwide, toll-free, 877-489-6350. Give us a call if you want to talk to Wally. Yeah, he's a very, quite a talented Canadian, proud to be a Métis, and he lives in Medicine Hat, Alberta, and we're very privileged to have him on the radio talking about his testimony of Louis Riel, and And so now with you, do you, are you going to go and try to get this put on a CD? Have you ever thought of that, Wally?
I don't know. I think you have to get some kind of rights to do that because this is written by another guy. This was, I can't even think of his name right now, the guy that wrote this play. It's not word for word what Riel said. It's pretty close. It's all, I read the actual testimony of Riel, and it's a lot of it's in there, but he spoke for 2 hours, and this is condensed. This one passage here is that's only a part of the play, and the testimony is about 10 minutes long. I think I don't know how long it took me to read it in order to recite it, but it's like about 10 minutes, I think, and that's only part of the actual play. Because then it's all the testimony of the witnesses and their cross examination by the lawyers and stuff like that. So there's a lot going on. It takes probably an hour and a half to do the whole play, but. To do my part, I'd have to get some kind of clearance to if I was going to put it on a CD or anything like that, I'd have to probably pay some royalties or something like that.
Well, maybe that might be the idea, because you know that, it's just a suggestion, you know, that because you do it so well and you know, and that makes it a very important selling point for people. To have a better understanding, to hear it and more clearer and sort of thing. And actually, if this was distributed into schools and universities, it would really clear a lot of people's whole idea of, you know, why Louis Riel did what he did, you know, with our ancestors, and. I can say that because it was my ancestors that were there as well. They were in the St. Laurent settlement. They were River Lot neighbors of Gabriel Dumont. I have a great-grandfather that was killed, and his name's Joseph Van Dahl, and he's my great-grandmother's father, you know. And so, and when people still are questioning, they don't even know their own history, you know. Maybe you should think about doing stuff like that.
You know, when you said about taking on the road in Canada, when we did the play here in Medicine Hat, we did it the following year in Calgary at the Lord Beaverbrook High School Theater, and then we did it the year after that at Elkwater in the outdoor theater. They have a maybe outdoor theater, and then we did it at Batoche, where they just close to the actual battle site. And they have Batoche Day, back to Batoche Days every year, and we did it there. The whole cast went out there by bus, and we did it. And they wanted us to come to Ottawa and do it in front of the Parliament Buildings in Ottawa and Winnipeg too. But it was really hard to get 30 men to take holidays all at the same time and transport us there. You know, it's been expensive, and I guess the money wasn't there to do that. But it was an interesting concept. You know, I think it would have went over well, but. I think more people hear it, the better. I mean, I know I get a lot of response from people, especially people who had relatives who were involved in the fighting and that was going on there. I get a lot of people come up and say, I'm a distant relative of somebody who was at the battle, you know, or Gabriel Dumont, or of, you know, somebody else at the battle that knew, you know, they were relatives of theirs. And it was amazing how many people came up and said, you know, that they just took them back in time, eh?
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, when I bring the performance of the Belle of Batoche to Richard's place out in Delia, it, you know, like, we had a long discussion that we might not put the play on because because we can't get enough people to sort of volunteer to perform the play. And the whole idea with putting that play on was to try to create a playhouse sort of thing, a theater playhouse. And I'm sorry, I don't live in Alberta, and unfortunately, I've got a very stubborn wife that doesn't want to move to Alberta. And it's no offense to the Alberta people; it's just that she's found a beautiful part of our British Columbia that we are very comfortable in and affordable. And so unfortunately, I got my hands tied here. So, and you know, and this is it's a very big problem with trying to do plays and of course your last testimony without a little bit of funding. But this is what I'm trying to say, that, you know, this is a year that maybe our Métis nations finally recognize you and start doing something about this. Like, you know, taking you to Ottawa where half the politicians don't even know who Louis Riel is, you know, outside of, oh, it's only those Métis people that want money. You know what I'm saying?
Now, there's a lot of, probably, not going to say ignorance, but maybe apathy, you know, about what happened in the past, and some people believe what they read in their history books that Louis Riel was a traitor. This play gives you another, you know, take on it. You get to see his side of it, and, you know, the government wasn't willing to negotiate or to give any, you know, concessions to the Métis people. They would just send police there and arrest them and throw them in jail or, you know, hang them or whatever, get rid of them. But when Wilfrid Laurier did the same thing in Quebec, he took up arms against the government, and they didn't you know, charge him with treason. They negotiated with him. And the reason was because, for one thing, I think it was white people. And another thing was they had the vote there. It was in Quebec where they had a lot of votes, and so they didn't want to lose the vote, so they negotiated and, you know, gave them the concessions they wanted. And I guess that's kind of the way it is always in the West and the East. You know, it's been that many ways for many years. The West gets, you know, the Great Canadian Cow. You ever seen that cartoon, The Great Canadian Cow, where it shows a great big map of Canada and a big cow across it, and the cow is eating hay that's being fed to him by a Western farmer, and then he's getting milked in Ontario, and he's got his tail up, and his poor little Nova Scotian or Blue Nose or Maritimer there with a bucket and a shovel, and you know, see what he's getting.
Yeah, you betcha.
Yeah,
we get away with all this kind of stuff on there until they start screening us. We can say anything we want. No, I'm just teasing you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that's an old cartoon. I mean, that was in papers many, many, many years ago, and it's slowly we're starting to get the vote out, you know, west now, so that they have to take it a little more seriously out here now. But I think the Métis people at that time, they didn't want to do any, you know, any negotiating with us at all. It's like, just shut them up, you know. And that's what you hear when you listen to this play. You hear how they tried petitions, they tried, you know, appeals to the government, and they didn't get anywhere with them. So finally they had to take up arms if they wanted any, you know, any kind of be taken seriously at all. And it cost Louis Riel his life, and for 100 years we slept, and now we're back, you know, in the forefront again, and it's about time that Métis people started being proud of their culture and heritage. Not, I remember as a kid, we didn't talk about being part Indian. It was like, be a half-breed was not something to be proud of. It was something you kept hush-hush. You didn't want to, you know, and if I had a very thin skin and a very short fuse when I was growing up. I've learned to get a longer fuse and a thicker skin now, and I let things roll off my back a lot now, and I don't get really mad if people are ignorant or biased, or, you know, if some people are just that way and you're not going to change them. But I do keep very proud of my heritage, and I'm, you know, and my kids too. I tell them, you know, don't be ever ashamed of what you are. Be proud of who you are.
So you got, how many kids have you got, Wally?
I have four, actually. I have three of my own. I have one as adopted son. He was my stepson, and I married his mother when he was 4.5, 5 years old. And that's 23 years ago now. And about two and a half years ago, he asked me if I would adopt him. He knows his own dad, his real dad, biological dad, but he knows now that he wanted to call me father. He always calls me dad anyway, and he asked me to make it legal, so I did. I adopted him, so now he's my son too. So, not by blood, but when we go out and play pool together, people say, "You know, he looks just like you." He even talks like me.
Yeah,
me too long, right?
Well, listen, And are you also doing music as well?
Yes, I'm still playing. I'm playing this month for Robbie Burns night at the Cypher Center here in Medicine Hat, and then I'm playing for a music festival at the Medicine Hat Folk Music Club is putting on. It's called the Tongue on a Post Festival, and I'm going to be playing, entertaining for the kids in that festival.
Yeah, that was another thing I wanted to ask you about your music. When you were at the festival there, or the rendezvous there, you did a lot of kids' songs, and I can see that you really enjoy playing that stuff. And here's another suggestion, and I hate suggesting things like this, but sometimes people get in their minds and that you could perform, and sing and record children's songs, because we need that. You don't realize how much it affects, and it's not like the doodle lops and the diddly lops or whatever. It's really, you really touch the kids, because you had a lot of kids around you and you were singing songs as well. And there was another thing I noticed where you're at the camp. You build these little
hip sticks.
What do you call them?
Yeah, hip sticks. There's some people call them hoops.
Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in that as well.
Oh, many, many years ago, I learned how to do the hip sticks when I was just young, and forgot about them for a long time. Then my kids grew up, and I started making them for the kids. And then over the years, I've made a lot. In fact, probably this last 5-10 years, I've probably made thousands of them. I guess I've made 1,000 anyway, for sure. Because I'll do them. I used to pick up sticks off the ground and just carve them out of sticks, but now I just get doweling. I find it much easier to take doweling and cut it up and put it on the grindstone and do it that way. And they're a lot faster and more time efficient. I can make a lot more of them, and they work real good. Show the kids how to make them, or how to make them work. You know yourself, it's a little propeller on a stick, and you rub another stick on the one stick, and it with ridges, and it's got a little nicks in it, and that makes the propeller spin. And the idea is to get the propeller spinning one way, and then when you say yip, it spins back the other way. And there's a little nick to that, knack to that, and how you do it with your fingers. But if I tell you, I have to kill you. So
Is it something that's been in our tradition for years, and you just
I don't know where it actually originated, if it was Métis people or was this who invented it or whatever, whoever came up with it, but it's been around for over 100 years that I know of, for sure. So, I mean, I've had them at functions down in the States when I was down for the Eagles conventions down there, and I'd had old guys come to me saying, you know, my dad showed me how to do that. And I mean, it's going back a ways. I don't know where it came from or where it originated, but it's just something I like to pass on to kids. And I show them some little string tricks, too. I like to do a little magician string tricks with them. It's not actually magic. I guess it is magic for them, because they think that the string is going through their finger or through their neck or whatever, but it's just little tricks I've come up with over the years that people have showed me, and I just pass them down. I like interacting with the kids. I was Santa Claus in the mall this year, from December 21st till, or November 21st to December 23rd. I started doing Santa Claus. First night, the 21st, I was at a private party, and after that I was in the mall and did a lot of private parties too, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. Kids are great.
Let's go over this list that I've got you doing for the next 5 years here. So I've got you're going to be performing all over Canada and doing your testimony of Louis Riel. And then we got you making some music for kids. And, of course, we're going to have you do some more CDs, of course, your fabulous music and Métis stuff, because you do a very good job. And, of course, we're going to have you also making those little trick things for the kids. So I think I got you busy. What do you think?
I keep busy as I can.
I just love it, because, you know, it's like everything else. If you enjoy life and you do the things you want to do in your life, and which it seems that's what you're doing, This is fabulous to hear stuff like this.
Well, in six more weeks, my wife and I are going to be traveling out for a month. We're going down the state. We're going to do a little swing down to Roswell, New Mexico first. Friends down there we're going to visit, and then go to Tombstone, Arizona. And then probably swing by Yuma, Arizona, and then Las Vegas, Nevada. We're going to maybe see some shows and then come back home. It's going to be a nice month that we spend together because, you know, the way things are right now, we kind of like ships passing in the night. I'm going, she's going. We have other things we do, and we don't get to spend an awful lot of time with each other. And we sure like the time we run holidays. We get together every day. We're doing things together, and we get along pretty good, I have to admit.
You know, that's part of, you know, like Dale and I, we're not just, you know, husband and wife here. She's my partner, and she's my, you know, we sit down and we talk and chat and, and, you know, and even when I'm going to school, I'd like to have her with me. And, of course, they allow this, which is really, really, really well, that they allow her to come with me while I'm going to school. And, you know, that's what life is all about. When you have a partner, that's what it's all about. You're supposed to share your lives together. And, you know, my first relationship, you know, it was like, boy, I had one-track mind. It was just like, get on to bowling or do some sports, and I never really enjoyed my life with her. And it's unfortunately now that she has gone on to the spirits and left me with the two kids here. But you know, that's one thing that I didn't want to have to say at her funeral. You know, that I did. You know, we missed the boat, sort of thing. So, but I said to myself that, you know, if I get married the second time, it's never going to happen again. So, I got one more question to ask you, and it's very important because your heart is in the right spot. Your heart is in the Métis Nation. And my next question is, what are your hopes for the Métis people?
Well, that's a big question. I really want to, like, I think there's got to be more unity. Like, you touched on that earlier, like, how they've got to separate it. It is, like, separation from province to province, and there's Métis Nation, locals, and there's some disputes there. You know, there's a lot of, I think, personalities entering through more than they should. You have to learn to get along as a nation. And the Métis Nation is no different than, you know, any other political organization. We have to stay together, work together for the same things. And housing the people that, you know, that's one thing the government's helping. There's funds available, you know, through grants and stuff like that. But our local here is very active. We have a lot of things going on. In fact, I'm involved in our local here. I'm on a couple of boards. And, we try to get things done. You know, we're limited by how much we can get from the government, and we get some from, we have casinos every year, you know, a casino, and we work at that, and it raises some funds for, you know, things like housing and lots of social programs we have. We try to travel to some of these events, like Métis, I don't want to say rendezvous or things like that, and I went down to the States, actually, this summer. We went down to Lewiston, Montana, and there's a great big Métis area there. Like the Métis, when the Red River Rebellion happened, and a lot of them ran down to the States, and after Batoche, too, a lot of people, you know, went down to the States, and in fact, they're still down there, lost them. They never, and some got sent back to Canada, but there's still lots. A Métis area down there is very, and if you go down there, you recognize names from up here that were, you know, same people that were up in Canada, that they're down there now. You know, so they have a great big rendezvous down there. In fact, they incorporate with a powwow. They have a powwow and a Métis gathering together.
I agree. You know, going on your words, that we have to find more unity between not just our own locals, but our own leadership. we have to come together as provinces together to work together. The way Louis Riel has set up his provisional government, you know, he would look around and he'd say, you guys are doing it all wrong. You know, don't do it like the white people do it. Do it like what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to build our nation and be together and create unity. And, you know, and this is what it was all about, you know. So, yeah, Wally, it's been really, really, really nice talking to you. And I'd just like to, thank you from the bottom of our heart and to wish you all the best in the year 2009. And as well as I'm going to try to be more in touch with you and try to get you to come to British Columbia and do some performances out here, you know, providing that you're available, and, you know, bring in your wife if she can take some time off, and see if we can get you even into the interior to do a couple performances. Hello, is there somebody on the line?
My wife just came in. Oh, is somebody phoning in?
I don't know. Just hang on. Is there anybody on the line? Oh, I thought I heard somebody on the other line, but maybe they hung up. Anyways, Wally, yeah, so is there anything else you would want to say? I talked your ear off?
I was going to tell you, you were talking about Louis Riel's provisional government. Either my great-grandfather or my great-great-grandfather was a member of Louis Riel's provisional government in Manitoba during the Red River Rebellion. So he was, I think he was one of the white guys, because he had Métis and white people on that provisional government. It was he had both parties, you know, together, and so there was, he wanted unity, you know. He was, like you said, for the white settlers as well as the Métis.
Oh yeah, I know that. I hope I never offended anybody. You know, Louis Riel was not against the white people and the white settlers. What Louis Riel's complaint was with the government of how they were treating the settlement people, and that's where the complaints were mostly issued. You know, so. Yeah. So, anyways, I'd like to thank you. I am going to remind everybody about the fun new contest that the Machif Métis Museum is putting on. Everyone to participate. This contest will feature our Machif Métis Museum logo, and it's on our website, the Machif Métis Museum website. That's www.machifmetismuseum.org. It's on the calendar of events page with the details and clues of the contest. It will feature our Machif. It also will be featured on our Machif.ning community website, http machifmetimuseum.ning.com on the main page, and also on our BBS radio station, Métis Voices radio schedule page. Please remember to include your phone number and mailing address on the entry. One entry per household. And we got a way to track you down so we know. So you may contact, that's how you may contact, or so this is why we can need to contact you. The contest will run from now until we receive the chosen 10 winning entries. And we like to wish everybody good luck on that. And don't forget, it's our time now is coming to close. We would like to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in. Our directors and sponsors, Don, Seth, and the gang of the BBS radio station, for allowing us to present this program each week to you. Please send feedback about our Métis Voices Radio. We would sure like to hear from you. The BBS Radio homepage, column on the left-hand side. And also be sure to visit the museum website, again, at www.MachifMétisMuseum.org. And join us on our community website, the Machif Métis Trading Post at http://MachifMétisMuseum.ning.com. Next week, because I'm on at school, there will be an archive, and we'll figure out which one we're going to play for you. But Wally, I really like to thank you for being on the radio show for tonight. And maybe you can even put join our community website there, and people can actually get a hold of you to buy your CDs and do a little advertising for yourself.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It was great.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, and we're going to call you good night, Marcy, from everybody, and drive safe, and with the snow out there, we'd like you to make sure that everybody is going home sober. So thanks, Wally, and thank you, Don and Seth at BBS Radio. Good night, everyone.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Métis Voices Radio Show, our own internet radio program at BBS Radio every Friday evening. Tonight, we start off the program by playing the Red River Jig by the Métis Toe Tapper. Our show begins at 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.